Welcome to Season 4 of E-Commerce Fastlane. This podcast helps resilient entrepreneurs thrive with Shopify. And now, on to episode 168.
You're listening to E-Commerce Fastlane, the podcast show to help you build, manage, grow, and scale a successful and thriving company. Powered by Shopify. Listen to real conversations with partners and subject matter experts as they share proven practical strategies, platforms, and the best Shopify apps to help you accelerate your business. The time is now for you to improve efficiencies, grow revenue, profit, and lifetime customer loyalty. Please welcome your host, startup founder, and strategic advisor, Steve Hutt.
Today's episode is brought to you by High Conversion Recommend, powered by Amazon Personalize. They help medium to large Shopify merchants boost engagement, increase conversions, and most importantly, grow new revenue with the same product recommendation AI that's used on Amazon.com. When your visitors can't quickly discover the right products, they leave and they go to a competitor or a big marketplace, which really explains why, on average, 90% of your online visitors never find a product or add an item to the shopping cart. High Conversion Recommend is unique. They use visitor actions, context, and Amazon's own recommendation algorithms to generate ultra-relevant, personalized recommendations all in real time. You know, and the results are proven. Shoppers who engage with product recommendations are known to produce more in revenue per visit compared to those that do not. Because conventional recommendation apps train algorithms with existing customer data, the impact is limited to your smallest traffic segment, about 10% of your visitors, who are returning buyers and lookalike visitors. With High Conversion Recommend, you can benefit from Amazon's session-based personalized recommendation engine using live visitor actions and context to learn buying signals. This unlocks revenue potential from your largest share of visitors, up to 90% of your so-called cold traffic who would otherwise never buy anything. So I highly recommend install High Conversion today. Take them up on their offer. They have a 7-day product recommendation challenge. They believe they can produce 100% more revenue per visitor in just 1 week with the use of Amazon's product recommendation algorithms. So head on over highconversion.com and mention you're an e-commerce Fastlane listener, and you'll also get an exclusive 20% off their annual plan. Well, hey there, it's Steve, and welcome back to the e-commerce Fastlane podcast. Now, if this is your first time listening, this is an e-commerce show where we have honest and transparent conversations about building and thriving with your store powered by Shopify or Shopify Plus. If you're an ambitious, lifelong learner, which I'm sure you are, that's why you're listening, you're definitely in the right place today. New episodes are available twice weekly with your favorite podcast players like Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and many more. You can also stream current episodes, including a very relevant back catalog of all the partners and agency partners that I've interviewed, 165 of them, and literally you can stream it directly from ecommercefastlane.com. Now, in today's episode, I'm excited to have my guest, who is Ben Zettler, who is the founder of Ben Zettler Digital Media. And Ben is an e-commerce and digital marketing consultant. And what he does is he helps both small, mid-size, and even some large-scale Shopify merchants literally to profitably grow revenue while assisting with building blocks for the lifetime customer value, which we're all seeking. He works across three core pillars of success and growth, which hopefully he's going to dig into that today's episode. But he talks about like optimizing the store to drive conversions, discusses kind of the execution and the strategies to acquire new customers, and then the enhancement of tactics and tools and things to retain those customers. And that helps build that LTV that we always try to aspire to. He's a Shopify partner. He's a Shopify expert. He actually is a Shopify Plus consulting partner, as well as lots of other accolades, a Facebook marketing partner, and also a Klaviyo Platinum partner, which is a very important marketing automation tool for email and SMS. So let's learn from Ben today about how to efficiently build paths for growth. So hi, Ben. Welcome to E-commerce Fastlane.
Hey, thank you for having me. That was a great introduction. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure. So I mentioned, as I said, a little bit at the top of the show here, but I think it's better in the founder's own voice about exactly what you're doing and the problems that you're solving. So let's talk first on a high level, and then we'll dig into some of the strategies and tactics as we kind of chat through here. But like, what sort of problems are you solving today for Shopify brands?
Well, I come at things from a very unique perspective that not a lot of other service providers in the space necessarily have. It's kind of a three-pronged perspective. For me, I actually was a Shopify store owner myself. I started my own business 8 years ago. It was a company called Brooktide Sunglasses. It was about store number 41,000 or so. I think my partner managers looked it up one time. Obviously now it's, you know, approaching or over 2 million merchants. You could certainly tell me that number. But, you know, very much before Shopify's rapid growth phase. And so I have this experience of having been a Shopify merchant. And the side note is my business was acquired 3 years ago, which was very cool. It was a great opportunity. But I was a Shopify merchant. I also was the former director of e-commerce at a Shopify Plus company, so an e-commerce company that was on Shopify Plus, and a place where I also have another number of other experiences related to digital marketing that we can certainly get into. And then, of course, the client work that I'm doing. So I do, again, you know, to not sound like a broken record right off the bat, have this unique perspective of understanding the trials and the tribulations and the struggles that merchants for businesses of all sizes go through in leveraging what they can out of their Shopify storefront and out of their marketing to ultimately grow their sales over time.
Let's dig in and unpack a little bit about that journey, because I think you launched a Shopify store, you did your thing, you took an exit, you've been, you know, working a lot for a long time in this industry. So you understand a lot of the technology and the players and the partners that make a lot of this engine work for a brand. What do you believe uniquely positions you, you know, and your team now, I guess, on a couple points? Number one, the desire. Why did we flip from being an operator of a e-commerce platform or e-commerce company to now wanting to help people grow their brand? So that's the desire part. And then do you believe that the expertise just came out of kind of being in the trenches and learning it, executing and doing it and thinking, hey, wait a second, I know what I'm doing. I've obviously done it and taken an exit. I believe I want to continue in my journey of, you know, digital marketing and helping other brands grow and scale.
Yeah, I mean, you pretty much answered it right there. And I'll answer the second question first, in that it's something that definitely has naturally grown. I mean, this is not anything of what I'm doing on a day-to-day basis has nothing to do directly. Of course, there's learnings here and there. Nothing to do directly with, let's say, what I learned in college. Maybe now, and it's crazy to say I'm 30 years old, so maybe now what they're teaching in college is a little bit different than 8, 9, 10, 12 years ago, but it's all from experience, every single bit of it. Not that college isn't important. A lot of people today say that, oh, you don't go to school, it's no big deal, get your experience, do this. I'm not in that camp, but there's just different things that you learn. But yeah, I mean, I've really, really enjoyed that process. And I think unintentionally in some ways, when I did grow my business, which was kind of spurred on from, well, I'm now out of college, I now don't have a job, I now need to do something to make money. That's why that started. And it just kind of grew and grew and grew to the point where, you know, so-and-so knew that I'd started a business, they needed help with their Shopify website, and this friend needed help with their social marketing. And all of a sudden, I started to take on what I would call real clients, meaning people that I didn't know. And then Shopify invited me into the partner program. And then I got invited to the experts program. And, you know, we're fast forwarding 8 years later. And this is my life. This is my career. Like, and this is what I enjoy doing. So it is definitely something that unintentionally happened and grew over time, but something that I definitely do really enjoy. Mm-hmm. And then to answer your first question, I mean, going from, I think, a little bit of a different way than a lot of folks may do it. Like, you hear a lot of, you know, somebody started at an agency and they started to learn about digital marketing and e-commerce, and they decided, well, I enjoy what I'm doing, but I'm not so passionate about the products that we're selling, and I want to start my own business. I've had a reverse experience, and You know, it's tough to say because, like, you know, that's sort of my experience. And I do get that question even from potential clients sometimes. Well, if you're so good at this, you know, and why don't you just start a new business? Or why aren't you still running that business? And, you know, it's just a different level of joy, I think. I mean, I do truly get joy out of working with different clients. Things are always fresh, working in different industries. And I found a really distinct niche from a service provider's perspective that is not necessarily filled, because I bill myself as a consultant, though the way that I operate, and I do have folks on my team, like, it's very much as if it were what I would think of as an agency, a formal agency. But I'm very much involved in the day-to-day of what I do with my clients because I enjoy that. And it's a different value from a pricing perspective and the types of clients that are looking for that level of service and where they're at in their journeys. And it's a really fun niche that I think I've filled and that I enjoy being in the middle of.
Lovely. Thanks for sharing that. It sounds like we're cut from the same cloth, so to speak, because I also have the same sort of entrepreneurial journey. Got out of college, working for Best Buy, wanted something better, launched an eBay store, became a power seller, ran that for like 7 or 8 years, then got involved in a startup in optical, selling contact, kind of in that same optical space, but selling contact lenses and glasses. That massively blew up, took an exit on that, and then agency world for 4 years, and then learned about Shopify while I was at the agency. And then next thing you know, here I am as part of the merchant success team at Shopify. But then also, you know, my digital brain is this podcast, which really helps. And I, you know, you call yourself a consultant. I would agree with that. I kind of label myself as more of a trusted advisor. So same idea. I'm doing the same things you're doing with the brands that I manage, about talking about improving efficiencies and profitably growing revenue or building lifetime, you know, loyalty. These are all things, you know, along with how do you maximize the value of the Shopify's platform and the partner ecosystem, which I hope we're going to dig into in a few minutes, because I think there's some necessary pieces of the puzzle that make a lot of this work on top of just the core platform. So, you know, Shopify does have a framework, which I'm not sure if you're familiar with at all, but I know a lot of people that have listened to the show, I mentioned a few times, and this framework is called MGM, this merchant growth model. And we essentially talk about 6 key business drivers. There's acquisition, the conversion, the retention, the brand strategy, the business operations, and the last one is technical solutions and integrations. And we talk about the maturity levels of all of these things as part of our ongoing dialogue with brands. Now, with so much work to be done, and I've noticed a lot, even with the brands that I have, I try to structure 90-day sprints and kind of help them move along their journey of maturity and complexity. But, you know, what's the low-hanging fruit first? And then what do they want to work on? That's kind of, I think about these 6 drivers and their maturity levels. Have you noticed any mistakes that a lot of Shopify merchants are making today as it relates to maybe your 3 pillars that we talked about, or any one of these sort of, you know, acquisition, conversion, retention, and brand strategy, any of these sort of things? Does anything come to mind about sort of things that are challenges that you believe founders need to be overcome to help with their growth?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I see so many similar things across so many different merchants at all different levels of revenue all the time. You know, fortunately, being in the Shopify partner space and being ingrained in the experts marketplace, I get the opportunity to speak with a lot of different merchants. Again, different revenue levels, different types of businesses. They're selling different products, some that are dropshippers, some that have, you know, created their own clothing that they do in-house, jewelry companies, athletes, like, you name it. And from the perspective of the services that I offer and the things that are most commonly missing, regardless of business size, email and text marketing, like let's just talk specifics. It's just not, folks are not doing it great in a lot of cases. There's plenty of brands that are out there that are doing it super well, either in-house, they're working with a third-party team, whatever it might be. But there's so much opportunity, especially with the changes that have come in from iOS 14.5 and how that's affecting advertising attribution and just general performance across all platforms. Owned marketing, now more than ever, is the time to step that up for any brand. If you are not, I'm biased because I truly believe that it is the best platform to use from an email and text marketing perspective, given my experience with so many different platforms. But if you are not on Klaviyo, if you are not using text marketing within that in addition to email, what are you doing? Because again, there's so many opportunities that are being missed from a retention perspective, you know, where a client's maybe not doing any email marketing at all, or if they are, they're collecting emails, but they're not presenting any type of offer to actually get those users to convert, or they've heard of text marketing and they've thought about doing it, but it's not necessarily a priority for them because they haven't seen the value and the power that it can. I see that all the time. That's just one. I mean, even from an advertising perspective, even despite all the changes that have gone in place over the course of the last just 6 weeks, as we sit here on this podcast in mid-June 2021, how that's changed and how that whole world has changed since the beginning of May, you know, it's still, you know, super important from a customer acquisition perspective to have a very specific strategy when it comes to how you're going to handle advertising, regardless of how much you're going to spend. Are you going to spend $100 a month? Are you going to spend $100,000 a month? The principles are still there in terms of how you want to acquire users, the way that you're going to structure targeting, how you're going to funnel them into displaying different pieces of content that all kind of, you know, ties in even to the branding and the different categories you just mentioned before. You know, that too goes ignored. And there's many reasons why. I mean, for some, it's that they just don't have that level of expertise and awareness to understand the tools that are at their disposal to really dive into these things. And for others, and I think you were on one of the webinars that I did with the Shopify team, I try to talk about this a lot because I was one of them. But the overworked founder, you know, the solopreneur, the person that is handling all aspects of their business, if they want to scale that thing, they need help. But even for larger companies, what tends to happen, and I think this is a result of just the rapid change in e-commerce and digital marketing and social media and where the world is at today, that even for larger companies, the digital teams, the social team, the e-commerce team, very often is one or two people. So even if it's a larger company, it's still as if they are that solopreneur, that overworked founder. They're just the overworked doer that I like to call them, that they may have some knowledge and expertise and understanding of how all of these things work, but they don't have the help or the time to really get there. And their biggest issue, again, talking about a lot of issues that I commonly see, is not necessarily, again, that they don't have the expertise, but rather they don't have the time. And they haven't had the time management skills, or even if they have those skills, they're not utilizing them at the moment to really make sure that they're concentrating on all these different areas that are so vital, that are the lifeblood or the lifeline towards their e-commerce business.
I'd also add to that too is I find a lot of the brands that I manage, a lot of them suffer. If it's the solo founder or the overworked founder or people just taking on too many tasks and roles, a lot of them suffer of what I call the shiny object syndrome. And they're always asking me about, hey, I found this new app and I think it's going to solve a lot of my problems. And I think the reality is that you really need to kind of distill it down to the basics and saying like, what are we trying to achieve here? What's the problem we're trying to solve? And is it possible on Shopify Plus to do it natively, either through scripts or through some kind of, you know, or flow or Launchpad or like whatever it is there. And there's a lot of native things inside Shopify that can be done without having to use an app. So then you get to leverage the power of, you know, the cloud that Shopify is on through Google versus, you know, dependencies on third party. So I think you mentioned it, but the kind of the over usage of apps and stuff sometimes, or just thinking that an app is going to solve the problem. I think overall, if you actually look at some of the largest brands, they're not sitting on 30 or 40 apps in their admin. They're not, because they know every app they add is slowing down their website. And that goes into another whole conversation of SEO and site experience and web vitals. And that's another whole rabbit hole.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I'm talking to myself. I mean, that's the exact conversation that I have with my merchants that I work with that are on Shopify Plus, or they're at a certain volume where it's really all about the optimization of their site and what are we doing to grow the business to a certain level. Yeah, absolutely. I see that all the time too. The Shopify app ecosystem is one of the reasons why Shopify has grown to the level that it has, and why the platform itself is so special in my eyes and has helped millions of merchants own businesses and has also matured so that millions of people work for these developers that create these apps and these services. It's a great thing. But when it comes to optimizing the business for a merchant, when you want to implement a new feature or you want to do something, you have to ask yourself, like, is this something that ties to what should be a core part of our strategy? Is it really going to help us? And if it's not going to help us, is it going to hurt us from a performance perspective? And yeah, I mean, I'll take on a new client that's on Shopify Plus. Well, first thing I'll do is I'll go to their app page in the admin, and I'll see 50 different apps. And then the first question I ask is not why are all these apps installed? I ask, okay, have you been tracking? They probably haven't, but can you at least list off for me how many apps you have also uninstalled over the last year or two? Because that's also things that people don't think about. I mean, from a performance perspective, I know we're talking pretty specifically here, but you mentioned load time. Yeah, if you had 20 or 30 other apps that were installed that all have their scripts embedded on the back end that, you know, sometimes they say, yeah, it's automatically going to be removed, but the reliability of that is generally pretty low when that happens automatically. And all of these things affect performance. Why is my website so slow? Or why is this happening on my website? Or it's just, it creates all of these problems. And even not just thinking about things from a load time perspective, you know, other problems that I see with what merchants are doing at all revenue levels when it comes to apps and different features and different great things that you can achieve with them is that it takes away from the brand. And that's a whole nother element where, you know, if you go to a website and you start to get bombarded with modals and countdown timers and sticky bars that say, yeah, spin and win. This thing, you know, this customer in Tulsa, Oklahoma just bought, you know, 30 seconds ago. And, you know, those are rarely ever based on real purchase data anyway. You know, all of these different things where it's like, colors are off and fonts are mismatched. And, you know, why does the customer want to be bombarded with all this stuff anyway? And it just feels like kind of, for lack of a better term, like hokey. Like it doesn't tie well into the brand. And that has a direct effect on conversion. And that's the things that people need to step back and think about. Like if you find an app, if you find a service, like make sure that it has a real utility for you and you're not just being wowed by the numbers of what they say from whatever their attribution model is on how they're increasing sales for merchants.
Yeah, it's all about trust, and you're right. And you use a lot of different tools and things like that. And that's what happens. There is a disparity in the brand and the brand voice and just the execution in general about like, am I just a number or are we building community and loyalty? And are we raving fans around the brand? You know, is there an environmental or social impact around the brand? There's so many things that you need to think about, not just adding on an app to solve what you believe is going to help you get to the next level. So let's pivot a bit into those apps, because I think it sounds like you have a lot of experience in just identifying what is inside a brand's admin and then trying to justify, well, why are those there? And do you understand the attribution of all of these? I mean, is there a native way of doing it or can we consolidate some of them? And so I'd say as of today's recording, probably more than 6,000 or so in the App Store. And there's probably countless marketing platforms and, you know, customer service solutions and things that also connect to Shopify. And a lot of those, you know, companies I've interviewed here on the podcast. And do you have a list that maybe you could share with our listeners today, maybe of like a must have, like any kind of tools or marketing platforms? You say, hey, if you were to start a fresh store today and you were to launch, what is necessary in the admin from, let's forget their own plus or not, it's kind of a separate conversation, but let's just assume, what sort of things do you believe need to be in the admin for apps that maybe Shopify doesn't have natively?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a few, and I'll you know, give some shout outs essentially to a few partners of mine, because one side note before I answer your question is when it comes to apps that I have partnerships with and different services. And this is something that I try to make clear to clients that I work with, because they'll ask, you know, oh, you're recommending this app, but they're, you know, they're just paying you to say that. Like, I do get affiliate revenue ultimately from a number of different apps that are out there. But very often when it comes to creating a function on a site natively, like you just said, you know, I almost in all circumstances recommend that over anything else. And anybody that I have partnerships with, I have, because I started using them before establishing those partnerships, and I understand the ins and outs. And again, that's where that other side of the table experience comes from when I work with folks. But it's not an extensive list. You know, number one, Klaviyo. Get your email and your text marketing together and use that platform to your best advantage. Number two, you want to have a reviews app that's going to work for you. There are a number of really good ones that are out there. I'm a really big fan of Junip. It is a relatively newer app from a reviews perspective. What I like that they've done is that in their, we can call them the lower level pricing plans or the lower level offerings, you can have Google Rich Snippets integrated. You can integrate with Klaviyo so that you can run your automations for review prompts out of Klaviyo. The data integrations are pretty seamless. And it's also pretty customizable too. Like if you want something beyond just a star rating, we're actually in the middle of a project with a client now that's moving over to Plus. I'm not going to name the name of the company, but it's a fun set of products that they have around like games and puzzles. And, you know, a difficulty rating is like a thing that can be facilitated with that app. But there's a number of good ones that are out there. And a lot of folks will want to, you know, have different elements of like visual reviews and postings and things, but make sure that you have a reviews app that works for you. I'm also a really big fan of an app called Gatsby. And this is really newer, but what Gatsby does, I essentially kind of call them almost a technology platform where they have really refined the process of making influencers out of your everyday customers. Now, what they do is they can get opt-in for a user, let's say within a Klaviyo pop-up, putting in their Instagram handle, and then they can track when a user mentions you on right now on Instagram, and they're going to be expanding to other areas like TikTok and YouTube and things like that. So you can leverage that information to say they enter their handle. They can assess, okay, this user has over 1,000 followers. That's pushed as a custom property to Klaviyo. You can serve them a flow that says, hey, mention us and we'll give you a 20% off or $10 off your next purchase. They make the mention. Another triggered flow happens to actually deliver that incentive. It's a very cool platform. I definitely recommend that merchants that have high repeat purchase rates or consumable products get into for sure. You know, beyond that, there's so many that are out there. But again, like I said, relatively short list. I mean, another one that I'm a really big fan of is called Wisp. It's from the same company that created Wise Pops, like the pop-up and modal tool. But what Wisp does is serves a notification feed on your website. So you can have a little bell, you know, in the header or in your toolbar or your site. And, you know, like you would, let's say, on a news site or ESPN.com or within the confines of a social app or something like that, you can serve notifications to customers that are dynamic in nature. So they're, you know, someone's coming back to your site, they've made a purchase before, they can be shown something different than somebody who's brand new. And it speaks more towards like kind of the natural way that people are used to interacting online, particularly on mobile phones. And they have high rates of interaction, a really good way to curate, you know, new product releases and information that you want to push forward, sales and anything else of that nature. You know, that's kind of the core. I mean, depending on what a client is looking to achieve, like, you know, this is where it kind of goes to the conversation of like, all right, are we going to make the decision to go with an app, or is that something we are going to build natively, like apps that will pull in Instagram feeds? Or, you know, one thing that I do tend to recommend staying away from, I think that's almost a more important conversation sometimes than the things to add. And again, the caveat here is that there are so many good apps that are out there that perform so many different functions. And sometimes the justification for an app is a matter of weighing the effect that it's going to have on performance, but then what it's going to do for the merchant themselves from a resources perspective, you know, and that very often may outweigh, you know, the effect that an app may have on the website. So that's the caveat that I want to put out there. This is not a bash fest. This is not to say anything like that. But for merchants that have the resources to potentially implement certain functions natively, I do recommend not to ever use any sort of page builders. Anything that is, the way I'll term it to a merchant that I'm working with, anything that is customer facing. You know, you can assume at that point that there's a lot of scripts that are embedded there, you know, JavaScript and CSS, and just a lot of heavy information that's going to slow the performance of your site. And there's a branding element to that as well. When you're using like a page builder, not everything is going to jive properly from a CSS perspective, where, you know, fonts are maybe not aligning properly, or buttons are off, or just general formatting of sections and just things don't look right. But they really affect things from a performance perspective. And frankly, don't always make it easier to operate the site. I mean, you know, even on an interim basis until Shopify does release sections everywhere, you know, having a theme that does have, you know, those quasi sections enabled landing pages, in my opinion, are way more impactful than using page builders. Another one on the not to do list, I referenced it before, but anything that like really pushes things in your face, like, you know, modals that are kind of all over the place and different countdown bars and the things that put the little like this product's hot right now on the PDPs or so-and-so bought this 20 seconds ago, like avoid those at all costs.
I'm going to add one more that, and I agree with you on these ones. The Klaviyo is fantastic. I've not played with Junip. I've used others like Okendo or Yotpo, have been on my radar for quite a while. Gatsby, I've interviewed them. Phenomenal little solution, especially on the plus side where you can make some edits in the checkout.liquid code and have some opt-ins and things going on like from within the whole checkout flow, which is great to find the social footprint of your customers to know if you want to work with them to, in exchange, maybe become a creator or an influencer. Depends on the size of their footprint. I think they had a joke they played recently. They told me that one of their merchants, Tim Cook, made a purchase from their website. And it's like, oh, 7 million followers. Okay. Probably not going to do business with Tim Cook, but from Apple, but it's interesting that it understands the social footprint, which is great. And then how do you deal with those sorts of customers? You put extra bonus thing in the box? Do you send a separate letter that you said, like trigger it, like add a tag and add a trigger and have a flow start in Klaviyo? Very, very cool. The one I want to add is with first party data is, you know, we, and I know you know this about retention is like the key. The customer acquisition costs are very high. And it's like, if you already have product market fit, you're already selling a lot of products already, how do you maximize the value of your existing customers? And we talk about this RFM, this recency frequency monetization strategy. And it comes around this life cycle journey, I guess we're going to call it, where there's active customers, there's at-risk customers, and then there's churned customers. There's one tool that I just highly recommend. Like a lot of my brands are using it. It's called Segments. And from a company called Tressel, so T-R-E-S-L. But in any case, it's a really neat solution. They've extended trials. I've interviewed the founder recently, but it's so interesting where it literally looks at your first party data and understands the buying behaviors of your customers, not just some generic kind of best practices to re-engage a customer because they haven't bought in a while. No, looking at all of your order history and your customer, how they interact with the website, the tool actually helps you understand about new signups or one-time purchasers or repeats or loyal customers. And as they move through their life cycle and their journey on your brand, there's playbooks and it connects to Klaviyo. So it gives you the opportunity to figure out, how do I market these people before they churn? Or how do I reward and incentivize my loyal customers? Or how do I find more loyal customers? All of these things are available by just looking inside Shopify and the first party data connected with this one tool called Segments. So yeah, throw that out there.
It's funny that you mentioned that one. I just got introduced to Segments last week by a merchant that just started working with them. So I'm excited to learn more about it.
Yeah, you will absolutely massively love it. So this is a good pivot because first party data is on a lot of people's minds, more because of the media hype that's happening right now with iOS 14.5 update that's happened. Now we have to manually opt in to be tracked. I'm sure a lot of us have seen it on our phones. Every time you go and reopen an app now, it's like, do you want to be, you know, you want good advertisements being sent to you? Yes or no? And so you have to kind of so before it was the other way around, we're automatically opted in. Now you have to manually opt in to want to be tracked to then have ads being given to you. And so I just would love to hear your take. I know it's only been, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks, but I'd love to have your take on it so far from maybe from an acquisition, like a CAC kind of perspective. And are there any basics today that we need to think about in relation to this iOS 14? There's a 15 coming down the pipeline. It's so interesting. So I just would love your lay of the land as it sits today.
Yeah, this has been the biggest topic of conversation amongst all of my clients over the course of the last 6 weeks. And I've, you know, tried to give even the fair warning ever since Facebook really started to push that hard at as far back as December of this past year, really, where they started to implement various changes to the platform to prepare for the inevitable. It's been interesting because for clients at all different ends of the spectrum from an ad spend perspective, performance has really fluctuated a lot you know, some of my merchants with the largest ad spends have not fared as well in some cases with merchants that have lower ad spends and vice versa. It's been really difficult, to be honest with you, at this point to decipher patterns or getting an understanding of like what is the new normal at this point. And I think part of that ultimately is we don't have very much information behind adoption. How many people are actually opting in to tracking, and how specific is that to every individual merchant that may be targeting certain users? Like for, I think it was Forbes or whomever had a, I may be misquoting it, but there was an article that had come out maybe about a week or so after the change at the beginning of May that 4% of users had opted in. I don't know what the update on numbers is by now. I can't imagine it's much higher. So it's really all about, I think, adjusting to the new normal in some ways and getting an understanding of, not that it was ever very reliable. That's one thing that people have to consider too, is that if you are so reliant on the data and the performance data coming out of like Facebook and Instagram, for I'll use them as an example, but again, this is applicable to really any tool, any advertising tool, any tool that uses cookie tracking, but Facebook has really been at the forefront because of their fight against it. My thing, especially for higher volume merchants, if you're not already, and this actually goes back to the essential tools, have a really strong reporting tool that pulls together all the data that you have from various resources. A Glue, an Elevar, you know, those are two that I do highly recommend so that you can really get a better understanding of your data and the data that you do know. Now, the things that merchants can do to try to mitigate some of the effects of not having cookie tracking really anymore, it is fairly simple. Again, the effectiveness is still kind of up in the air because it's just been really, really inconsistent performance across all different spends, all different industries. But it's simple. It's verify your domain in Facebook Business Manager. Update on your pixel the events, the prioritize the managed events. And you know, for Shopify merchants, just go into your Facebook sales channel. And when it comes to the, I'm not using the correct term here, but to the API tracking section, put that on maximum, click save. And that's really all you kind of can do at this point. Now, from a strategic perspective, with the actual advertising, there's also some other recommendations that Facebook has put out there that I've had conversations with my partner managers at Facebook about what they're seeing some folks have success with, you know, some things to do. So, you know, before where a company may be super reliant on lookalike audiences based on a pixel event, primarily purchase history, those have become less reliable. So you may want to create lookalike audiences based on things like engagement, traffic, and you know, link clicks, landing page views, things that Facebook has all the data for. You also may want to consider lookalike audiences based on manually uploaded customer lists. So get as many people that have purchased as possible, export their email addresses, import them into a saved audience in Facebook, or into a custom audience rather, and then create lookalike audiences based on that. Because then Facebook can work its magic in matching those email addresses to user profiles. And in theory, we'll have more data than the now unreliable pixel-related data for purchases. You know, also, I would recommend testing optimization events for different pieces of advertising. So run actual A/B tests for campaigns that are optimized for things like link clicks or landing page views, versus things that are optimized for purchases or adds to cart or initiations of checkout. You know, I'm kind of painting a little bit of a dark and scary picture, but I've had plenty of merchants like at this point where, again, things aren't necessarily as stable as I'd like to see them, but where performance is not actually so far off from the pre-iOS 14.5 days. You know, we're ultimately not going to know what the difference would have been had iOS 14.5 not been released, but somewhere performance has stayed relatively consistent. It's just a matter of, you know, taking all these, I guess precautions maybe is not the right word, but for the lack of a better one, you know, taking these precautions to mitigate the effects. Those are the types of things that I have seen so far merchants have success with.
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. So it sounds like, I mean, the big takeaway, there's some kind of tactical things that can be done. And then the other part is to really start thinking about and doubling down on your retention marketing strategy. Yes, there's top of funnel and generating new revenue from, you know, new customers. And like, you know, once again, it may come back to that tool, that segments tool or other different types of tools that look at your Shopify first party data. So your customers, and you can sync over with these email addresses over to Facebook and start marketing and look alike and seed audiences and different things that you can do, along with thinking about the marketing efforts of how do I maximize the lifetime value of my existing customers, or how do I avoid churn when they're in some sort of a cohort of customers as they move through their life cycle. So I'll nudge that tool again. I'll put it into the show notes for segments, something to look at anyways, you know, as we kind of move through and learn. We're learning as we go here.
And one thing I want to make sure I cover off on before we move on, because it speaks specifically to that point that you just made. You know, we talked at the beginning of what are some of the sort of key mistakes or missteps or things that are just kind of going ignored for certain merchants at all different levels. The changes to iOS 14.5 more than ever do put an emphasis on your first party data and your own marketing channels. And what are you doing from an email and text perspective? The example that I always like to use for prospects, you know, folks that I'm talking to about potentially working together, whether they're on Shopify Plus or whether they're starting a business out of their parents' basement like I did 8 years ago. The example is, you know, if you send 1,000 people to your website via paid marketing, 500 at least, and I'm being generous because it's probably much more, but 500 at least are going to bounce right away. And of the 500 that are left, maybe if you're lucky, 200 are going to make it to a collection page. And maybe if you're lucky after that, 100 are going to make it to a product. And of the 100 that make it to a product, if you're lucky, 10 are going to add to cart. And of the 10 that add to cart, again, I'm going to drive it home again. If you're lucky, one or two will buy. So even if we take out those first 500, there's 498 other opportunities to get a user to opt in to your own marketing channels, and then you can remarket to them over time. If you don't, you've now lost them, and the only way they're coming back is if you run another paid ad that they're going to be less receptive to, because now they've already clicked through and shown that they haven't had enough of a level of interest to make a purchase. So that kind of drives home the point ultimately that your own marketing channels are more important now than ever.
Get opt-ins for your site visitors, however you do it, built into your theme, using Privy, using Just Uno, using Gatsby for the social side of it. So I think they can do both. Even Klaviyo's got their own way of opting into through email or SMS. And so there's lots of opportunity. It's just do it. I might even add too, you may want to think about push notifications as a possibility too. The push owls of the world.
Yeah. You know, yeah, push owl, exactly. So you mentioned two other apps I probably should have mentioned before with your question. Push owl, I've worked with them for a long time. Just Uno, I've worked with them as far back as my sunglasses company. You know, from an acquisition perspective, you know, a lot of really cool advanced things that you can do and ways that you can segment users and serve them different pieces of messaging. And yeah, web-based push notifications, like that's just another channel that you can own essentially. And Push Owl has been at the forefront of that for about 5 years now. So those are two really great tools.
One thing that's cool about it, more of a side note too, is that I have a lot of brands that say, well, I'm not ready to do push notifications. I think it's a little obtrusive, but the idea is that you have the script running, and so you're just getting the opt-in. So when you are ready once a month to offer a sale, a drop, or promotion, or whatever, you start acquiring all of these opt-ins. Like, do the work now by getting the opt-in now, even though it doesn't cost you any money to build your opt-in list. When you're ready to create a campaign around your push notifications as part of a greater, you know, omni-channel kind of marketing strategy, wherever you're going, it's a good way to have. So I have brands that, you know, 10, 15,000 push notifications they have ready, or opt-ins ready to go. And they do a sale once every couple months, poof, they pop it up and it's attributed to being from push, and it does drive traffic and revenue.
Once again, I feel like I'm talking to myself, because the first business that I ever installed Push Owl for was actually still in my days at Steiner Sports. We installed it on Steiner's website, and to be quite honest, I forgot we did. This was in, I forget what year it was, but I remember it was like February, something like that. April, May came around, and I kind of realized that it was there, and did what a lot of other merchants do. You install an app, you leave it there. Is it having an effect on your site? Is it slowing things down? You forget about it. Came back to it. We had over 30,000 users opted in 2 months. And it was a new channel for us. It was great.
So let's talk about the future for your agency. Obviously, you're doing a lot of great things right now, you know, partnering up with a lot of like the best partners in our ecosystem and, you know, just using a lot of your experience, as you mentioned, and be able to pay that forward and really help up and coming brands and, you know, those in the mid and enterprise, but just, you know, you're there to help. Just would love to understand maybe what's your North Star for the remainder of 21 and end of the days, or any other partner alignment or innovation, just trying to understand like how are you going to continue to offer value and assistance for Shopify brands?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great question, and one that if you had asked, you know, a year and a half ago pre-pandemic, I probably would have answered a little bit differently. I've been very fortunate over the last several years, you know, especially ever since taking my consulting work full-time after Steiner Sports was bought out. I had been waiting about a year eventually when that did happen. It's almost actually exactly 2 years ago in a couple of days. But prior to that, I'd been waiting about a year to take my consulting work full time. And my boss was like, you stick around. And then eventually it was like, you know, we're about to get bought out. You should stick around, get your severance, and you can be on your way. And I've been very, very fortunate that that is exactly how it played out. And, you know, even pre-pandemic, the business was growing and you know, frankly, doing super well. And then the pandemic hit, and the perspective that I've had is that I've got my health, my family's got, we've got our health, everybody's good, you know, with everything that's happened around the world in the last year, and the business has just grown with how e-commerce has grown, and everybody saw that, you know, that big graphic at April of last year, you know, 10 years of e-commerce growth in 3 months or whatever the number was. You know, I kind of view it as the sky's the limit in a way for what I'm doing. I've had a lot of really great opportunities with really great merchants, really great partners. You know, my intention, to give you the nitty-gritty of my business, and the folks that work with me know this, like I don't have full-time employees specifically by design. I have a really strong network of contractors, that folks that either used to work for me at my old full-time job, or people that are also within the Shopify partner network, or just folks that I've worked with for a number of years. And it's really, for me, a matter of building that further so I can add more value to clients and grow this business and just kind of keep my head down and keep doing for as long as I can, because I get enjoyment out of it. And I have really had a lot of fun with the ride that this has been over the last several years. And I'm certainly very excited for what the next few years will bring.
I think you're smart about the gig economy and understanding these SMEs, we call them, like these subject matter experts. I think there's some real merit in maybe not having everyone on payroll, but you know, the proof is in the execution and the results that come out of experts by vertical. And so I think it's interesting that you're building a Rolodex of very interesting partners that you can lean on as part of an overall scope of a project or an ongoing project. So I think that's very notable. This way, instead of having to worry about the training and all this stuff, it's like, no, at the end of the day, it really is about what these partners bring very specifically. And then there's learnings for everybody within the organization, but mostly from you down. But I think it's great. Great idea to keep pushing through on that. Let's kind of get wrapping up here for today, but is there any, I guess I'd say like maybe takeaways or any next steps? What are the action items that you want those listening today? What do you want people to do today based on this conversation?
So I hope this conversation has helped merchants at all levels potentially get a couple of snippets here and there through my ranting about what they can do to improve what they're doing from a marketing perspective with the tools and resources that they take advantage of, as well as, you know, the setup of their website and, you know, the resources that are there at all different plan levels, even if they're not on Shopify Plus. And really to just keep in mind the importance of all of these different resources. And this is kind of a message almost to some of the bigger companies that are out there that, you know, they have that one or two person team that's handling different things, that is maybe a bit just not ill-equipped, but burnt out, frankly, with all of the different areas of the businesses that they have to touch. So, you know, just to really understand the importance of what they're doing digitally on their website through their marketing, I hope I've given a glimpse into what people can, you know, really prioritize.
Definitely have. and some great recommendations for some tools and just some, really some mindset around how you need to attack your website and really take a step back and talk about what the problem you're trying to solve and understanding the customer journey and building retention marketing into it and owned media. We talked a lot about that. So I think that's really, these are great, great, great topics. So how can people learn more about your agency and kind of the next steps?
Yeah, absolutely. So I try to keep it simple. Just go to benzettler.com, BENZETTLER.com. I'm super active on Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram. All my handles are at Ben Zettler. There you can view a lot about the services that I offer, as well as just some of the insights that I like to share and different podcasts and webinars that I'll go on and have a lot of conversations like this that they can ultimately learn more about how they can make improvements. And certainly, if somebody out there listening is interested in potentially speaking with me about working together, something that I am doing exclusively for listeners of this episode, if they go to ecommercefastlane.com/Ben Zettler, there they can find a contact form where I'm offering a limited number of free consultations. So free 30-minute consultations. We can get on the phone, talk about anything related to your business that you may need help with, that you have a question about, that you're looking for, a little insight and expertise on. I think we can talk about how we may be able to potentially work together in the long term as well.
Well, I'll make sure I update that in the show notes. Just, once again, Ben, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been a lot of knowledge bombs today, a lot of validation about kind of the work that I'm doing as a trusted advisor. And it's nice to see that we're in alignment, maybe, brothers from another mother, who knows. But it's just interesting that we definitely are in alignment about, what can we do to help brands grow and scale. And I think we are both from a Shopify perspective, but then from an agency perspective, it sounds like you're aligning yourself with the right partners and the right, strategy. And I really appreciate that. And, one thing that I think already that I just want to make sure we're clear by the end of the show is that Shopify really is on a mission to make commerce better for everyone. I would say almost even democratize it. And it seems very clear to me based on this recording today that you are also in tight alignment really with wanting to help Shopify brands. I mean, you're coming on the show and 45 minutes later, we're getting into, there's a lot of great, insights that you've shared today. And I just wanted to thank you for that. I wanted to thank you for sharing your vision. And I guess most importantly, just giving back to the Shopify ecosystem. There's lots of brands and different maturities. And I think there's some great value in this recording today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on. One of the things that I always say and then I'll close on is that Shopify over the last 8 years has very literally changed my life. Unexpectedly so. Like I said before, I started my sunglasses business sort of out of necessity, kind of had this itch. Like I always wanted to maybe do something. It'd be fun to own my own business. My great grandfather owned his own business. He owned a 5 and 10. My grandfather owned a dry cleaners. My father, who is still going, owns a party decorating and events business. Entrepreneurship is very much in my blood, but never really expected, to be honest with you, that it would turn into what it has turned into today. And I really have Shopify to thank for that. I can remember a very specific conversation that I had with a partner manager a few years ago. I always give her a shout out, Lauren Hellstab. And she was my partner manager at the time, and always very forward with everything, and asked, like, what would it take for you to take your consulting work full time? Like what would it take to get there? And she's, for whatever reason, she was very interested in the growth of my business. And I really appreciated that. And to be honest with you, up until her asking me that question, I had never even thought about it. I had never thought that this was something that I could turn into a career. And it very much has. And with that, anytime I get opportunities to get on a podcast like this or do a webinar or give feedback on the Shopify partner portal or on different offerings within Shopify or work with different app developers or whatever it might be, I always take advantage of those opportunities. It's all a symbiotic relationship. Certainly the more I do, the more I can get out of it, the more I could potentially help merchants, the more merchants are helping me grow my business. Like it helps everybody, but I very much have Shopify to thank for what my career is and even what my non-work life is. And it's something that I'm very grateful for sure.
Sound like the flywheel is going. So that's great. All right, Ben. Well, thank you so much again and have yourself a great afternoon.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Today's episode is brought to you by High Conversion Recommend, powered by Amazon Personalize. They help medium to large Shopify merchants boost engagement, increase conversions, and most importantly, grow new revenue with the same product recommendation AI that's used on Amazon.com. When your visitors can't quickly discover the right products, they leave and they'll go to a competitor or a big marketplace. And that kind of explains why, on average, 90% of your online visitors never find a product or add an item to the shopping cart. Effective product discovery is a must-have capability for all Shopify brands with 50 products or more in their catalog and ideally a million per year in revenue. High Conversion Recommend uses visitor actions, context, and Amazon's own recommendation algorithms to generate ultra-relevant, personalized recommendations, most importantly, all in real time. So install High Conversion today and take them up on their offer. They have a 7-day product recommendation challenge, and they believe they can produce 100% more revenue per visitor in just 1 week with the use of Amazon's product recommendation algorithms. So head on over, highconversion.com, mention e-commerce Fastlane as a listener. You'll also get an exclusive 20% off their annual plan. Well, that's it for today's episode. I'd like to thank you personally for being a loyal listener of e-commerce Fastlane. It's my hope that this podcast is offering you a ton of value through growth strategies, tactics, and exclusive insider tips on the best Shopify apps and marketing platforms, all with my personal goal to help you build, manage, grow, and scale a successful and thriving company powered by Shopify. Thanks for investing some time today and listening to the show. I'm so proud and excited that you have a growth mindset and are a constant learner. I truly appreciate you and your entrepreneurial journey. Enjoy the rest of the week and keep thriving with Shopify.